Good morning. It is time to get up with unbelievable finishes in the NBA bubble. Game 7 comes down to the final seconds. The least likely person makes the biggest play. While the other game goes beyond the final second, you have to see it to believe the way it was decided. Oh, what a night in the NBA. We'll start there. Plus, last night, another reason, and this is a big one, to believe that Tampa Tom will be hosting the Super Bowl this year. All that and much more as we get up with you, starting right now. Greeny in Bristol on a Thursday, and we're packed. Why wait? Let's get right to it. Game 7 last night. Rockets, Thunder, win or go home. Everything on the line. It's the game of the night. So much pressure on Russell and Harden and company to move on. They're 0-5 in the last five elimination games. Pick it up fourth quarter, tied at 96. Harden, Robert Covington. Yes. Covington scored 21. Rockets a three-point lead. Next Rocket possession. James Harden was 1 of 9 from three-point range last night. Scored just 17. Would have been the GOAT had it gone another way. Same score. Under 5 minutes to go. Dennis Schroeder. How good was Lou Dort last night? Wide open three. He knocks it down. He scored 30. We're tied at 99. Minute and a half on the fourth. Rockets down one. Harden, P.J. Tucker only scored 5, but those were huge. Rockets take the lead. Here we go. Ball game on the line. Season on the line. Chris Paul, where are they going to go for a bucket? Gilgeous Alexander. Dort in the corner. 5 seconds. 4 seconds. Oh, James Harden. James Harden, of all people, makes the huge block. So much criticism of his defense over the years, and in the end, he makes the enormous defensive play. Dort, you see, comes down with it, tries to throw it off Harden, can't get that done. Rockets would make a free throw, by the way. Two-point game. Thunder had one more chance. This one didn't end it. 1 second left. This is what OKC came up with. I'm not sure where that was going anyway. In the end, it goes the other direction, and the Rockets hang on for the win. What a night. The drama extraordinary. The Rockets survive in advance. 104-102. Let's talk about it.
At defensive stop, you let out a scream afterwards. What were you feeling at that moment?
Offensively, I played like excuse my language, but I couldn't make a shot, turning the ball over, just doing everything that was not supposed to happen, but I just kept sticking with it.
It's tough. We fought hard all year. Obviously, a lot of people doubted us, but we didn't doubt ourselves. We expected to win, right? And that's the way we played all season long, every game. We expected to win.
Now, what a season Chris Paul had. In the end, it wasn't pretty, but the Rockets finally able to win an elimination game, something they couldn't do in the previous four postseasons. Overall, it's their first Game 7 win since the 2015 Western Semis against the Clippers, and so on they go. Timmy Legs and Coach Fizz are with me early this morning. Guys, thanks for getting up. And Tim, again, of all things, the game ends on a James Harden defensive play. The irony is extraordinary. What did you see?
Yeah, I did. It's, you know, look, on a night when he didn't play well offensively and, you know, he was going to have this laid at his feet if he didn't make a play to help them win this game, he did it defensively. And I saw a great read on his part. You're going to focus on the block, everybody at home, but I'm going to focus on this part first. He's down on Steven Adams sinking. If he leaves too early to get out to that shooter, Steven Adams is going to get a dunk. So he has to rake down and then get out and then the contest. And Greeny, in a game in which on a night in which so many shooters were fouled at the three-point line, that's a tremendous risk to take as a defender. To go up and not just contest, but to go up and actually try to get a piece of the ball without making contact. And you saw great technique there because he gets his entire body to the side and reaches back and just gets enough of that ball to basically win a game 7 and get his team onto the next round on the defensive end of the floor. Amazing play.
It's an extraordinary play. Coach, through a coach's eyes, take me through that final sequence. What did you see?
Well, what I thought was really impressive was how, you know, Legs hit it on the head is where James Harden looked like he was just doing a defensive drill. I mean, it was textbook. He was sitting on the big's legs just like you teach. We always work on this in practice where we throw skip passes and you can't leave until the ball is released in the air. His technique was perfect. He goes up. He gets the block. But the thing that was puzzling to me was Lou tried to throw it off of him, but Lou was in bounds and could have taken another shot. And so that was kind of mind-boggling to me. I know it was a great block, but I think Lou made a mistake there in trying to throw the ball off of James when he was on balance and could have got another shot at the rim.
Maybe a little bit of panic in that moment sets in there. I saw what you saw, and I understand what you're saying. The clock is running down, and it's sort of a crazy moment in these circumstances, one way or another. The Rockets finally find a way to move on. Coach Fizz, this is the matchup now. Houston, Lakers starts tomorrow night that everyone wanted to see and everyone expected. Do you give the Rockets a chance against LeBron and the Lakers?
Slight. Just a slight chance, because I just felt like the Lakers are just so big at every position. And they can really push James and Russell to the rim, to all of that height and that shot blocking and that length at the rim. And on the offensive end, they can really pound them. I mean, they just got multiple guys that create matchup problems from a size standpoint. If Houston does have a chance, though, it's going to be because of their style of play. They're going to get up and down. They're going to run. They're going to get up a record number of threes. I think James Harden can't have any games like he had last night, even though I do commend him on finding a way to help his team win. But he and Russell Westbrook have to be fantastic for them to have any chance of beating the Lakers.
Rockets took 49 threes last night. Quickly, Legs, before I get to the other game, give me a quick sense. Do you think the Rockets have a shot against LeBron?
Yeah, I like the way Coach Fizz said it, slim. My dad used to say that, slim and none, and slim is starting the car up to leave town. Here's the problem. It's the size difference. They're not just playing a bigger team. They're playing a bigger team with more skill as well. This team is going to get crushed on the offensive glass, and the ability of LeBron and Anthony Davis to beat up those switches and score over guys like P.J. Tucker and Robert Covington is going to be a real problem for the Rockets in this series.
All right, we'll talk more about that one as we move forward. Meanwhile, we have to move backwards again. Oh, what a game between the Bucks and the Heat last night. Giannis' team down one, going in, looking to bounce back. Let's go right to the finish. Under 20 seconds to go. Bucks are down six. Keep an eye on the ball movement. Giannis gets a dunk, but that's not what I mean. Now keep an eye on the defense. The Bucks playing D. They've got Jimmy Butler trapped in the corner. What's he going to do? Well, he's going to do the last thing you should. He just throws it up towards his own basket. Up goes Brook Lopez. It's a two-point game. 8.5 to go. Now we got under 8 seconds to go. Bucks inbounding, down by three. Keep a close eye on Chris Middleton. Goran Dragic goes up straight. You tell me if that's a foul. You tell me as we show it to you again, because it is called a foul, and Middleton gets three free throws. We'll find out what my guys think it was, a good call or bad, in a moment. Middleton makes all three. We're tied. Now, Heat inbounding. Jimmy Butler in the corner. Here comes Giannis for the help. Butler, no good, but hold everything. The hands in the air. The whistle blows. It's a foul on Giannis with no time remaining. You tell me. Is that a call that you make at the end of a tie game in the playoffs? It was made. Butler goes to the line. No time left. Just needs to make one of two. And here it is. Ball game. Jimmy Butler. Quiet night. 13 points. But that one wins it. Giannis 29-14. But not enough. The Heat up 2-0.
Tried to make it tough for Jimmy. You know, the ref said that there was contact there. Maybe there was. You know, it is what it is. I feel like personally it was the right play. I've done this multiple times in my career. You know, when the guy's dribbling and he's getting his rhythm going, like he got 4 seconds. He's not going to pass the ball. He's going to shoot the ball.
All right, let's get right there. Tim Legler, this is a superstar. Down 1-0 with no time left on the clock. Is that a good call?
I like the call, and I'm going to tell you why. And some people need to look at the replay again, because the only reason Giannis Antetokounmpo puts his left hand on Jimmy Butler's side is to brace himself and prevent himself from hitting him with his right shoulder and forearm. So for me, you know, if he doesn't do that, he's going to plow into Jimmy Butler with his right shoulder, and then it's going to be an obvious call. So the fact that he touches a shooter in the air, I think for me, it's a call that you really have a hard time arguing with. Listen, I understand people don't want to see a game end, but with free throws, with nobody on the foul line, on very minimal contact, and it didn't affect the shot. But the bottom line is, Antetokounmpo did that for a reason. He was preventing himself from hitting him actually much harder with his right shoulder, right hip, right forearm. It would have went right into Jimmy Butler's side if he didn't put his left hand on his body. So I understand why the official felt like he needed to protect the shooter in that situation. Once you leave your feet and you get touched in the air on a jump shot, then you're really opening it for interpretation for the official, and I think it's difficult to argue that.
Coach, what do you think?
I hate seeing either call being made. I hate it that it comes down to free throws like that on two really tough calls on jump shooters. I thought the Miami foul was suspect at best. I thought Goran Dragic did a great job of just getting his hands up and just really, you know, just standing there and trying to avoid the foul, even though he should have still not been next to him. But on the other end, I kind of disagree with Legs. I know he touched him some. I know contact is a foul, but you don't like to see a game lost on a touch foul like that.
Now, the bottom line of it is sometimes the circumstance is important. And with everything that was on the line in that moment, it winds up deciding the game. One way or another, the call is made. The series is 2-0. Legs, you told me here the other day and on the radio as well, you thought Miami was going to win the series. Now it's 2-0. What are the Bucks going to do to get back in this thing?
I don't think they're going to come back and beat them 4 out of 5 times. They still have a real problem closing out games offensively. And there was a stretch even late in this game. They got back into it mainly because Miami allowed them to get back into it with the foul, Jimmy Butler's turnover. They made some plays at the end that contributed to that. But the way they operate their offense, I'm talking about the Bucks, in late game situations, it's very difficult for them because Giannis has some limitations in his game that are going to make it difficult for him off the dribble to go get a basket and decide things. And the Miami Heat, they just move the ball. They've got Jimmy Butler. They've got Dragic. They've got a couple different guys that can take the ball anywhere on the floor with a live dribble and escape traps and get themselves a good shot when they need to. So in a series when you're expecting close games, I just like Miami much more and trust them much more in close game situations. And I think Milwaukee has a serious problem on their hands now, obviously down 2-0.
Well, I want to focus on one of the things that you just said. Giannis has some limitations in his game. Right now, the name Pippen is trending on Twitter, and let me show you why. Because following this game last night, our Richard Jefferson, who will be live with us in an hour, tweeted, Giannis might be a Pippen. There, I said it. He needs his Jordan. It should be pointed out, Scottie Pippen is one of the greatest players that ever lived and has 6 championship rings. So it isn't an insult, but we all understand what it means, that maybe Giannis isn't ready to be the number one guy on a championship team. Again, the word Pippen is trending right now. David Fizdale, do you agree with Richard Jefferson?
I see where he's coming from with it, but I do think that Giannis is too young to make that determination. I think, has Giannis had his own Pippen on that team? To see if he could carry that team past where they've been. I don't know if Chris Middleton has consistently lived up to that reputation. So I think it's yet to be seen.
What do you think, Legs?
I think unless Giannis Antetokounmpo at some point, whether that's in Milwaukee or somewhere down the road, he becomes a free agent and changes teams, unless he plays next to a guy that is an all-league caliber player that can score from anywhere on the floor, he's going to have a very difficult time breaking through and winning a championship because I just don't see him ever getting to the point where he's a legitimate threat off the dribble from anywhere on the court. And that's what it takes. Look at the guys that lead teams to championships. Look at the alpha dogs on some of these teams. They all have a guy that can go escape with a dribble, take you out to the three-point line, get to the rim off the dribble, even shoot a mid-range. Giannis, for the most part, has to beat you one way physically. And unless he has a guy next to him that can do what I'm talking about, that can go get a shot when the defense calls for it and dictates that you have to end it a certain way, I agree. I think it's a great point on the part of Richard Jefferson, and I do think Giannis is going to need to play next to that guy to eventually break through and win a title.
So here's the way I see it, guys. And Legs, you tell me what you think of this. I don't think that Giannis needs someone else on his team who is a greater player than he is, right, but he needs someone who does the things that he can't. It's not really a criticism of Giannis to say that he isn't LeBron and he isn't one. He can't have the ball in his hands all the time because that's just not his game. So to me, it's not about Giannis not being able to be the best player on a championship team. But the limitations in his game are what we're talking about. He needs someone to facilitate, and maybe he doesn't have that guy. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, it does. And I think your point is this. He doesn't have a guy next to him. Like, Chris Middleton is a big-time scorer, and he's scored a lot of points in his league. Chris Middleton is not crafty enough with his handle where he can get anywhere on the floor in a certain situation and get a shot for himself. That's really what we're talking about here. So even if it's not a guy that's a superstar next to him, can you win with Giannis as your best player? Yeah, but you have to address that, and that's what I'm talking about. He doesn't have that guy on his roster right now. He's going to have to play with somebody like that eventually.
Very quickly, Coach Fizz, what do you think? Is he going to need something different than what he's got to win a championship?
Absolutely. I think he's going to need more playmaking, just like Legs was talking about. I think this series is going to come down to playmaking. You look at the guard play right now, Nunn, Dragic, Hero, Butler, even Bam Adebayo makes plays out there. I think the Milwaukee Bucks are very limited in that area, and they're going to have to improve there if they want to win a title.
All right, as I mentioned, we will have Richard Jefferson in about 45 minutes. He'll come on here, and we'll talk about this. Again, the name Pippen is trending right now, and it should be pointed out that to compare someone to Scottie Pippen is about as high a praise as you possibly can. Scottie Pippen is one of the greatest players that ever lived. But the point is what the point is. Giannis right now, this is with no disrespect to Chris Middleton or anybody else, he's doing it without another true superstar on his team. We'll see if he's capable of doing it. Guys, stay with me. We have much more basketball as we go. But the next stop is one that we make today because we lost a legend yesterday, one of the greatest players in the history of baseball. A legend in every sense of the word in New York sports and beyond. Tom Seaver was known as Tom Terrific. He died yesterday of complications of COVID-19 and dementia at the age of 75. And where do we begin? Seaver transformed the Mets from cellar dwellers to world champions. He won 311 games, 18th all-time. Most important win, Game 4, the 69 World Series. The Mets winning the championship. The Met legend, 3,640 strikeouts in his career, sixth most ever. Still has the record with 10 straight strikeouts in a game. And of course, as was much deserving, Seaver went into the Hall of Fame in 1992. He got a then record 98.84% of the vote. More on Tom Seaver. He was the 1967 National League Rookie of the Year. Two seasons later, won the first of his three Cy Young Awards. Also a three-time National League ERA champion during his Major League tenure and made the All-Star Game 12 times. This is one of those days that you're going to see grown-ups cry for a sports hero, and there's no one whose perspective I would rather get than that of my friend Timmy Kirkchin today. Tim, for people perhaps too young to have seen it and to have lived through it, how would you put into words what Tom Seaver meant to baseball and particularly in New York in the late 60s and the 70s?
Well, he's the greatest Met ever, and there is not a close second. He's, for me, one of the 10 greatest pitchers of all time. When you look at his wins, his ERA, and his strikeouts, the only pitcher in history that can match those three numbers is Walter Johnson, who's regularly considered the greatest pitcher of all time. Tom Seaver struck out 10 batters in a row. That is still a major league record. And they were the last 10 hitters of the game, showing how strong he was at the end. Greeny, I was 12 years old when he pitched the Mets to the World Championship in 1969. It was absolutely breathtaking to watch a pitcher who threw that hard with that kind of precision. And the way he threw that back knee used to drag against the ground. He was so big and he was so strong. He was Tom Terrific in every way.
He was. He was like a superhero in my youth. You know, I grew up in New York and I wasn't a Met fan. But you couldn't not only admire him, but you were almost in awe of him. He became almost a mythical figure. Can we talk about that a little bit? Not just how great a pitcher he was. The numbers tell you that story. But just what he meant in an even larger sense than that. How would you put that into words?
Well, he was so much a celebrity in New York because he was so smart. He was so worldly. He did the New York Times crossword puzzle every day, and apparently nobody did it better than he did. And he never took himself too seriously. Dick Schaap told this great story one night that Dick arranged a party out with a bunch of people, a bunch of writers and a bunch of celebrities. And among the celebrities were Muhammad Ali and Tom Seaver. And through the as the night went along, Ali, brilliant man but not a great baseball fan, whispered to Tom Seaver, "Which newspaper do you work for?" And Tom Seaver like burst out in laughter. That's how great he was at understanding his place and everything. He once said that when he retired, he wanted to become an artist, but he wasn't good enough to be an artist. But boy, was he a great, great baseball player who captured a town at the perfect time.
Yeah, it's very difficult to explain to people who don't get it what the 1969 Mets mean and meant to so many people of that era and of that time. And Tom Seaver will always be the symbol of that. Timmy Kirkchin, thank you very much for your recollections this morning. I appreciate it. And if you're wondering how they are remembering Tom Seaver in New York this morning. There's the Daily News, 41 forever. No doubt about it, he was the greatest Met of all. And to me, that's not even telling the full story. He is one of the true legends and icons in the history of sports. Tom Seaver, gone at the age of 75. We're back with more in just a moment. Get up on ESPN. Shopping for Mother's Day is usually a challenge because you wait until the last minute, but Macy's Gift Finder makes it incredibly fast and easy to find the right gift just in time for Mother's Day. Whether you're shopping for your sister's first Mother's Day or your fashionista mom who loves to make a statement, Macy's Gift Finder has so many great gift ideas that you can easily pick out something special to celebrate them both. You can shop by price, anywhere from $25 and under to $100 and under. You can also sort by category like fragrance, handbags, and more, or gift lists like for the mom who has everything, pre-wrapped gifts or gifts for grandma. Find top brands like Studio Pro Model Beats headphones, Polaroid cameras, and Samsung smart TVs. So what are you waiting for? Mother's Day is May 12th. It'll be here before you know it. Macy's has the perfect gift guide to make picking something for mom easy this year. Head to Macy's.com/giftfinder today. That's Macy's.com/giftfinder. Delicious, meat nutritious, and the snack that packs a real protein punch. Wonderful pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each one-ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Wonderful pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you're on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries. Well, the good news is, not only are wonderful pistachios a complete protein, providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snacking game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Get Up is brought to you by Disney's Mulan, streaming tomorrow for Disney Plus subscribers who unlock premier access. We're just getting rolling on Get Up today. Coming up, there's nothing like brotherly love. John Harbaugh sticking up for his younger brother. You'll hear what he said that got everyone's attention coming up. And fire the cannons. Tom Brady getting even more help in Tampa. Are the Buccaneers now the clear-cut Super Bowl favorites? We will get to that next. And we will check in with Sneaky Hembo. This one's going to be for D-Wood. And the question is this. Who was the highest drafted running back ever to play with Tom Brady? That's the question. The answer's next. Get Up on ESPN. We are back on Get Up, and if you're just joining us, we run the floor. We open the show this morning with thrilling finishes in the NBA. Game 7, OKC in Houston. James Harden, who had a terrible night offensively, makes the huge block at the end on Lou Dort, who was shooting what would have been a game-winning three. Rockets hang on to win. They play the Lakers in Game 1 starting tomorrow. Heat, meanwhile, take a 2-0 lead in their series against the Bucks. Giannis called for a foul on that play with no time remaining. Jimmy Butler made free throws. Again, this first one was all that he needed. Again, no time left on the clock. And the Heat take a 2-0 series lead. Meanwhile, we have another lead-worthy story today, and we'll set it up with this. Sneaky Hembo, and this one is for Damian Woody. Who is the highest drafted running back, D. Wood, that ever played with Tom Brady?
I'm going to go with Corey Dillon.
Corey Dillon's not a bad guess. It's not the answer. The answer is Fred Taylor. Remember that? Fred Taylor played with the Patriots.
Right,
he was the ninth overall pick. He has now been surpassed because here we go. Leonard Fournette is a Tampa Bay Buccaneer, the number four pick in the 2017 draft. The running back agrees in principle on a one-year deal with the Bucs. He confirmed it himself on social media last night. His one-year deal is worth $3.5 million with incentives. And I mentioned he put it on there. Let's take a look. This was Leonard Fournette on Twitter. The hashtag GoBucs, giving everyone a first look at him in his new uniform. On any other day, this would have been our first story because this feels like an enormous acquisition for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And we have D. Wood and we have Mike Tannenbaum, and Shefty is with us getting up early this morning. Shefty, let's start with you. How did this happen?
Basically, Greeny, from the time he cleared waivers, there were a few teams that were in touch with Leonard Fournette. Out in front was the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. The New England Patriots also made a couple of calls to Leonard Fournette to see if he'd have any interest in going to Foxborough. But ultimately, Tampa Bay decided that it needed and wanted another running back to complement its stable of backs. And it pursued Leonard Fournette, and it certainly sounds like he wanted to go there, stay in the state of Florida. And there was a real push here from ownership in Tampa to go get this deal done. And they did last night, agreement in principle, a $2 million base salary worth up to $3.5 million in incentives. And now they have another running back to add in to Ronald Jones, who I can't imagine is overly thrilled about the arrival of Leonard Fournette and some of the other running backs they have in Tampa, like Shady McCoy.
Yeah, so they have huge names there, and obviously this is a big acquisition, and let's just take a moment to appreciate the delicious irony of New England trying to sign him and him choosing to go with Brady and Gronk and company in Tampa. D. Wood, how much of a difference do you expect this player to make for this team this season?
Well, I don't think Leonard Fournette puts him over the top, but, I mean, he's clearly the most talented running back on that roster. I think he brings an element of physicality that they don't have at the running back position. I mean, you look at Leonard Fournette, he's a physically imposing player, a guy that's improved in the passing game. He had he had the most catches of his career last year with 76, so he can bring something in the passing game as well. But, Greeny, I think, look, first and foremost, you got to be able to protect Tom Brady in the passing game. But I think where he's going to find his value is those tough yard situations running between the tackles, because, again, they don't have a guy like that on that roster down in Tampa Bay.
Now, they've got a guy now, and he's hungry and everything else. So, Mike Tannenbaum, as one who made your living putting together teams, I look at what the Buccaneers have done this offseason, rebuilding what was already a very explosive offense. How would you describe what they've done and what they have?
Greeny, this has been a transformational offseason, obviously starting with the acquisition of an icon in Tom Brady, but you go right down the list, Rob Gronkowski, Shady McCoy, and then to put the cap on it last night with Leonard Fournette, there's a great axiom in football, which is pass to score and run to win, and they could do both when you think about Chris Godwin, Mike Evans, on and on and on, and now you have four good running backs, and let's not forget about Keyshawn Vaughn, a very underrated pass-receiving running back who had 66 receptions in college. This is a team that could do it all with an underrated defense, guys that could rush the passer like Pierre-Paul, Shaq Barrett. I see this team getting to the NFC Championship game at a minimum.
You made a very interesting point this morning when we were in our meeting where we talked about what this could mean for Brady, because football is a sport. We've seen this before. We've seen teams try to put together the quote-unquote dream teams, and it doesn't usually work in football. If Brady pulls this thing off, Mike T, what do you think it means?
Iconic status. This is LeBron James winning a championship with the Miami Heat, and here's why. Football is a sport of repetition, precision, and discipline. You have to throw all that out this year because we had none of it. If Tom Brady could put this team together, put him on his back, and win a championship in these very unusual conditions, he goes into a status of, I guess maybe Michael Jordan's in that conversation. He's already the greatest of all time. But this brings them to a whole nother level. If they could cobble together a team, never practice, and then roll right into a Super Bowl, it's never been done before, it would never be done again. It truly would be historic.
Yeah. D. Wood, pick up on that thought. As far as their ceiling here, you don't see them as a championship team. I feel like the first thing you said wasn't put them over the top. What does it make them?
No, listen, I've said before that Tampa Bay Buccaneers are going to be one of the contenders in the NFC to go to the Super Bowl. I just don't think Leonard Fournette puts them over the top as being the favorite in the NFC. But I agree with Mike T. Listen, if Tom Brady and company, if Tom Brady goes out here and wins a Super Bowl, it puts him on another stratosphere. Because, listen, Tom Brady's legacy is already set. He's already the greatest quarterback of all time. Now you have to, if he goes out here and wins a Super Bowl, now you got to talk about him along, maybe, you know, is he along the Tiger Woods, the Michael Jordan, that type of level as far as what we talk about in sport.
Shefty, what are you hearing around the league from what they've done down there? I'm putting together, obviously, beginning with Brady and this team that they've put together. What sense are you getting from people around the NFL about the expectation for them?
Well, I think everybody is excited to see what this team can do, Greeny. And as we're talking about this and bringing up all these examples of dream teams, I think back to the mid-1990s or even before then, when we had the San Francisco 49ers and Dallas Cowboys constantly collecting talent to help them get to and win more Super Bowls. And then I think, again, in more recent times, to a team like the Eagles that put together a dream team, the Cleveland Browns last year we were talking about them the way we're talking about the Buccaneers. The difference is the Buccaneers have Tom Brady. I want to add one other thing, Greeny, just said this morning. We now have some clarity as to why New England pursued Leonard Fournette. Mike Reese, a great reporter for ESPN Boston, is reporting this morning that Damian Harris, the Patriots running back, has a hand injury, and he could miss some time to start the season.
Okay, very good. Outstanding. Guys, we'll leave it there for the moment. Much more NFL to come. But to me, that is a huge acquisition. Leonard Fournette to the Buccaneers with Tom Brady. Meanwhile, it was just a few short weeks ago when the Big Ten and Pac-12 made their decisions to postpone all fall sports. Now, as the rest of the Power Five prepares for opening kickoff, it is the brother of a prominent Big Ten coach that is voicing his opinion. Here's the Ravens' John Harbaugh.
Free the Big Ten. Let's go. Let's go play some football. Let's get Michigan and Ohio State and all those great teams playing some football out there. Michigan had zero positive tests in August. And for anybody that wants to opt out, they can. They can. Their families should have that choice, just like the Southeast Conference gave the players and families in the Southeast Conference that choice. And most of them, as you know, decided to play as a family. So I think the Big Ten players and families should have that same choice. So I'm on record. There you go. You got it. Free the Big Ten.
Free the Big Ten, says an NFL coach. Heather and Paul and Mike T is here. Paul, I'm going to start with you. I mean, you've got the president of the United States putting them on the one-yard line, and you got NFL coaches saying, free the Big Ten. Think about that. What's the opposite of free? What can you imagine what is going on? How would you put this into perspective?
This might be the first time in my life I've ever agreed with a Harbaugh. I think that was fantastic. I mean, it was... And that's what you want from a brother, and he's right, and that's why this story becomes so confusing and disillusioning. And I realize, I mean, Greeny, we all realize why the Big Ten seemed to go the direction it did. It just went too early, and I know I say that every time we have this conversation, but at some point, the Big Ten needs to give us a roadmap other than we had an 11-3 vote, and we're not returning immediately because college football is starting. I mean, there are games tonight, and there are high school games in Ohio. There are going to be college games in Ohio. There's going to be NFL games in Ohio. But the best team in Ohio, the most famous team in the Big Ten, is not going to play, and nobody has been able to explain why not, other than we shut down on August 11th.
Yeah, and again, the pressure is just remarkable. Heather, what are you hearing from people inside there?
Well, Greeny, a Big Ten head coach texted me last night and echoed those sentiments, saying all coaches in the Big Ten want to play, and we are doing everything we can to get our teams back on the field as soon as possible. But it's a stark difference in terms of the coaches' mentality between the Big Ten and the Pac-12, which, as you know, also isn't playing. I talked to USC coach Clay Helton earlier this week, and he told me you have to be able to look at it through a father's eyes and say, you know what? This may not be the right time right now to do what we love. He said you have to respect the information and the decision that comes along with it.
That's an extraordinarily good point. I had David Shaw on my radio show, the coach of Stanford. He told me the reaction of his players was one of gratitude when they called off the season. Meanwhile, in the Big Ten, they're literally suing. People in the Nebraska kids are suing the Big Ten Conference. That's quite a juxtaposition. Mike T, you made an interesting point this morning. You know Kevin Warren, who's the commissioner of the Big Ten. I don't know what he was expecting, but obviously it hasn't gone the way he was expecting. What do you think of this whole thing?
Yeah, Greeny, when he made the decision, I'm sure he was assuming that when he looked to his left and he looked to his right, the Big 12, the ACC, and most importantly, SEC was going to walk shoulder to shoulder with him. And when he took a step forward and they didn't, now they're panicking. And here's where the pressure point is specifically. Everybody's really worried about this year, and obviously we should be. However, when you talk to the player personnel directors of all these schools, it's about recruiting. And just to be specific, when you think of about Jeff Hafley, he left Ohio State. He's establishing himself at Boston College. Mack Brown at North Carolina. They have tremendous opportunities to close the gap with the Big Ten schools in terms of recruiting if the Big Ten winds up not playing. So I think for Kevin Warren, I think he assumed that those conferences were going to be with him. And now that they're not, the pressure is bubbling up from the football programs, not just because of this year, but they are getting eviscerated in terms of recruiting for next year and the year after.
Yeah, Heather, let's go back. We were talking so much in the lead up to this about the conferences wanting to be together as much as they could. They kept having these meetings of the commissioners, and now they act and the others don't. Where does that all fit into this equation?
Well, college football, Greeny, is probably more fragmented than it has ever been. And American Athletic Conference Commissioner Mike Oresko and I talked about that. And he says that he wishes it weren't that way. And, you know, usually they are all in lockstep and talking. And it's just that has simply changed. And they are doing what's best for their own conferences. But Greg Sankey and the SEC, John Swofford and Bob Bowlesby, they are still going forward pretty much together.
Paul, final word.
Yeah, well, Kevin Warren did this to himself because back in July, Greeny, he had a Zoom meeting in the morning with the other four Power Five commissioners, and without telling them, he went out that day and announced that he was going conference only, and it was never the same after that. So he has no one to blame but himself. He made this decision. If he expected the rest of the college football to come with him, then he is in for a long tenure as that commissioner because that was a stupid mistake. And he was naive, and I think he is all of those right now.
All right, again, we will continue to follow this. Just remarkable. Meanwhile, let me get up and go around the rest of the world of sports on what is one of the busiest sports days of the year. In college, Jamie Newman, the expected starting quarterback for Georgia, has opted out of the season over COVID concerns and to prepare for next year's draft. He came to Georgia as a graduate transfer from Wake Forest in January. Meanwhile, in the NFL, Washington, Ron Rivera announces Dwayne Haskins will be the team starting quarterback week one against the Eagles. He threw for 1,365 yards and 7 touchdowns in his rookie year last year. Baseball, Yankees closer Aroldis Chapman, manager Aaron Boone, and Rays manager Kevin Cash were all suspended following a benches clearing incident Tuesday night. Happened after Chapman threw a 101-mile-an-hour fastball right over Mike Brasso's head. No incidents in the game last night, by the way, and the Rays wound up winning. And then top seed Novak Djokovic has advanced to the third round of the U.S. Open, beating Kyle Edmund in 4 sets. It's his 28th win in a row, his 74th all-time win in the U.S. Open. And today we have 11 consecutive hours of U.S. Open coverage starting noon Eastern, capped off by Serena Williams and Andy Murray in action tonight, and more primetime tennis on ESPN2 at 7 Eastern, wall-to-wall U.S. Open coverage on ESPN, ESPN2, and the ESPN app. Coming up, so much at stake for Dak and Carson Wentz. Which one of these star quarterbacks will win the division in 2020? My predictions coming up in our next hour, and I'm asking for your opinion. Go to my Twitter page, at ESPN Greeny on Twitter. Vote on the poll. Who do you think wins the NFC East? We'll have your decisions as we continue. This is Get Up on ESPN. We are back and we are running the bases. A day after Marcell Ozuna had a 3-home-run game for the Braves, Adam Duvall did the same last night. According to Elias, the Braves are the first team in history to have a player hit 3 home runs in consecutive games. Elsewhere, after having a pitch thrown just over his head the night before from Aroldis Chapman, Mike Brasso got some revenge last night. Hit 2 home runs. Rays beat their AL East rivals 5-2 in the ballgame, and Brasso said it wasn't about revenge. Afterwards, there were a lot of suspensions that came from it. Meanwhile, in the bottom of the 9th inning, Dodgers, Diamondbacks, Mookie Betts, his 12th home run of the year, tied it at 1, sent the game to extras, where Will Smith in the bottom of the 10th, walk-off base hit, Dodgers get a 3-2 win. Today on ESPN2, the second annual UEFA Nations League tournament kicks off with soccer powerhouses Germany and Spain squaring off. That's today, 2:30 Eastern on ESPN2 and the ESPN app. In their first on-camera interviews, four former employees of the NFL's Washington football team tell ESPN's Outside the Lines about sexual harassment they claim occurred during their time of employment. The women describe a pervasive organizational culture of misogyny and sexual harassment, saying owner Daniel Snyder deserves much of the blame. Here's an excerpt of their interview with our Jeremy Schapp.
What is it like working for the Washington football team in your experience as a woman?
It's hard working there. Like, you just know that depending on the certain way that you dress, that there's going to be comments made about what you're wearing, how you look.
Being a woman there, there were obviously comments made daily about your body. It was more or less who didn't make a comment. And I know that sounds horrible, but it's the reality. You try not to internalize it. It obviously can mess with your self-esteem and your self-worth to a degree.
I was followed to my car by a player who I kept saying, I don't want to go out with you. I don't want to go out. Just please just leave me alone. And he'd follow me to my car. And I have my colleagues telling me, oh, you know, just wait, you know, in a couple of days they'll get tired and they'll go chase somebody else. How is that acceptable? In other places where I worked, the sexual harassment was about the individuals. At the Washington football team, I felt like it was institutionalized. The ownership or the leadership of the company, I don't think they respect women. And I don't think they saw it as a problem.
The women who spoke to us said not only were they routinely harassed, but that there was no process to address their mistreatment. The team's human resources department, one person with other duties as well.
How would you describe the human resources department at the team?
Non-existent. There was no one to turn to.
There was nothing for us to do, and I hate saying that, but we're trying to do something now.
So we have Kimberly Jones with us this morning, as well as Shefty. And Kimberly, you covered that team, so you were around them regularly for a period of time. What is your reaction to what we just heard there?
You look at the dates that these women work there. It stretches, it's a wide span, you know, 2001, 2010, 2008, 2019, you know, they're describing a pervasive culture. And that's what the Washington football team and the organization have to contend with. You know, the team presents it as some bad apples that have since been removed, but it begs the question, is the culture so pervasive that it's more than just a couple bad apples? And these women are pointing to owner Dan Snyder.
Yeah, that really, I think, is the most important part of this, Kimberly, is what, if any, connection to Snyder do you see here? And how do you expect that to be handled by the National Football League?
You know, the league has to take a look at this. And obviously, there's an independent investigator that the team commissioned. But when you talk about Washington and ownership, where does culture start? Who oversees it? At the end of the day, Dan Snyder is the owner. So anything that happens under his purview in the last 21 years, he has to own that. And that's what the team has to grapple with going forward. And the league has to be certain that these conditions don't continue, that they are fostering a new workplace culture and that women feel protected there.
Shefty, what can you tell us as far as the NFL's reaction to all of this, the investigation that is ongoing, and anything else you're hearing around the league?
Well, Green, a few things here. Number one, the other day, the NFL took over the investigation from Daniel Snyder, and Daniel Snyder said that he was the one that told the NFL, recommended to the NFL, that it take over the investigation because previously he had hired an attorney, Beth Wilkinson, who's highly respected in the Washington area, to take over the investigation. And the NFL said, no, we're going to take it back from you, Dan, which he says he suggested to the league. Now, one of the most common asked questions these days, I think, is Daniel Snyder going to be able to hold on to the Washington football team? And the way that it has been explained to me is right now, yes. But it will be contingent upon what this investigation shows and how much the league uncovers. And I think we see, as more and more people come out, it inspires other people to come out and tell their stories. And if there's enough damaging evidence, then I think anything is possible here.
And Kimberly, I know that you interviewed the new president there of in the football program, and you know Ron Rivera a little bit. Is there reason to believe the culture there is changing right now?
It's only been a matter of weeks since Jason Wright, the new team president, was hired. Neither of these guys would have accepted the job if they didn't think this was fixable. They say they know what they're facing. So going forward, they'll have to make changes to the culture alongside Dan Snyder.
All right, Kimberly Martin Shefty, thank you both very much for the perspective here. And you can see Jeremy Schapp's entire story on the culture Washington football today outside the lines during the noon Eastern time edition of SportsCenter. Coming up, late game drama times two in the bubble, both going right down to the bubble, or right down to the buzzer, excuse me. Richard Jefferson will join us next. Get up on ESPN.
Seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.